Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Samantha Engel, and I represent Abraham Unemeyer, the plaintiff appellant in this case. From the inception of this case, Mr. Unemeyer asserted a garden variety state law breach of contract claim. Mr. Unemeyer claimed that the College of Lake County made certain promises to him and that they failed to fulfill these promises. That's as simple as this case is. It's clear that Mr. Unemeyer never stated a claim for the violation of under the Rehabilitation Act. The complaint lacked any of the elements of the Rehabilitation Act. It never mentioned any kind of qualified individual, any disability, any discriminations based on a disability. It never made any allegations whether or not the College of Lake County accepted federal subsidization from the government. The passing reference to the Rehabilitation Act does not convert this simple breach of contract case into a federal question. And to find otherwise, I believe, would set the bar very low for what is required to assert a federal question. And this court should be concerned that it would open the door to assertions of federal jurisdiction based on the weakest associations with the federal law. Recognizing this case and this complaint as a federal complaint would seriously compromise a meaningful limitation on federal jurisdiction.
So the court should have ignored those explicit references to the Rehabilitation Act in the complaint?
That's correct. I think that the reference to the Rehabilitation Act is just a recitation of what the catalog of Lake County stated was one of the reasons that they provide interpretive services. The contract that Mr. Unemeyer made with the College of Lake County was completely separate and discrete from the Rehabilitation Act itself. There's no mention in the Rehabilitation Act about providing two interpreters for complicated classes like Calculus 3. And a lot of the allegations in the complaint were about the oral terms of the contract that were made during this specific meeting that Mr. Unemeyer had with the Disabled Services Office during the summer, in which he explained that a class as complicated as Calculus 3 required some stability in the interpreters provided. And he specifically contracted with them to provide one or two interpreters to assist him in that class. And that's the crux of the complaint, is that the stability interpreters was not provided, but rather over 10 interpreters were provided in the course of a 16-week class. I think that if this complaint was brought in federal court, I think it's clear that it would have been struck down for failure to state the elements of a claim. The only reference to the Rehabilitation Act is the very act itself, and it doesn't reference any of the elements of the claim. And I believe that the college's compliance with the act...
Well, what about in your complaint in the third paragraph where the reference to Mr. Unemeyer's deafness is made and his need for interpreters, and in the fourth paragraph where you say that the college is both contractually and legally obligated to. Isn't that legally obligated a reference to the Rehab Act?
Well, perhaps the legal obligation that they have separate independent with the federal law perhaps induced Mr. Unemeyer to seek classes at the College of Lake County and to further negotiate additional contract terms with them. It's merely the fact that they provide these interpretive services that create a situation where Mr. Unemeyer would go to the school and say, I'd like to negotiate with you what you can provide for me. And it's those promises that were made and those agreements that were made that created the contract, not the Rehabilitation Act itself. I don't think it really matters why the College of Lake County provides interpretive services, whether it's pursuant to a legal obligation under the Rehabilitation Act or it's because they want to market their school that way and gain a competitive angle in the deaf community. They state that they provide those services.
Then why did it matter in the complaint that the college was legally obligated to provide those services?
It probably did not. It's an allegation in the complaint, and I don't think that it should undermine all the other allegations in the complaint.
Is there any legal obligation for an educational institution to provide those services other than the Rehab Act?
You know, I don't even know that answer, Your Honor, because we did not intend to make a Rehabilitation Act claim. So I don't know what other legal obligations they may or may not have. The allegations that we made were simple common law breach of contract claims.
So what's attached to your complaint is this, the message from the president and then student development at the top. And at the top, it talks about complaints to be filed if someone thought they were victims of discrimination or harassment. That's there.
And at the bottom
of that is services for students with disabilities. So what on that page goes to what you say your complaint really goes to?
Well, I think that starts the written contract that we allege, that they will provide interpretive services. And I think we make additional claims about oral contract terms.
But this page is all about victim of discrimination or harassment.
And we make no claims about being discriminated against or harassed.
I know. And that's why I'm asking why this page is there. You're saying the court should have ignored this services for students with disabilities. That falls on the bottom half right of the page. But the top part of the page, most of the page, is taken up on victim of discrimination or harassment. So what's the point of having it at all in there?
Well,
why is it there, period?
I think it can't. The portions about discrimination and harassment can be disregarded. And
well, that's the whole page. That's my point. That's the whole page, because the rest of the page talks about the Illinois Clean Air Act, and certainly you're not talking about that.
Right, and I think it was probably included just to show that they stated that they provided those services, which was...
There's no reference to services that are provided by the university on this page.
Services for disabled students.
No, it just talks about being victim of discrimination. It doesn't say anything. It's just the process for someone who is a victim of discrimination. It doesn't say anything about services. It does say services for students with disabilities at the bottom, but to me that speaks to the rehab.
And I agree with you that most portions of that page can be disregarded, and that perhaps it's placed there for context because it introduces the fact that they provide some services for disabled students.
What was the injury suffered by your client?
The injury suffered was that he paid tuition monies for services that were never rendered, that he had contracted for. An additional injury is that I believe if he were able to take this case to trial, he could set forth evidence that he would have more likely gotten an A grade, which was very important to him and which was the reason why he contracted for two interpreters rather than the B grade. This is somebody who has gotten straight A's his whole life. He got this B grade. He would say that it was because he was not provided with the services he contracted for. And he was damaged by it. It marred his academic record. It obviously is important to him, or he would not have been seeking a claim 5 years later. And he feels very damaged by that B grade.
And how did he graduate in terms of, was it with highest honors?
From the College of Lake County?
Right.
This
is the only B he got his whole academic career.
That is the only B that he's got his whole academic career. I don't know that he received a degree from that particular university with honors or highest honors or not.
So just wanted to try to see. I understand that he was very proud of his record, but if it affected his, you know, perhaps being valedictorian or something like that, I just wanted to see.
Right, and it did not affect him becoming valedictorian or anything along those lines. And I see my time is coming up, but I guess the last point that I'd like to make is that if the Rehabilitation Act did not exist, I think that there would be no question that this is just a common law breach of contract claim. And it would be a perversion of justice to show that you know, the provision of additional rights for somebody, like the Rehabilitation Act, would actually undercut somebody's common law rights to file a breach of contract claim. I see that my time is ending. If anybody has any further questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Smith, and I represent the defendant appellee, the College of Lake County. Today I'd like to discuss three reasons why the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the plaintiff's motion to reconsider. Plaintiff's counsel spent a lot of time today arguing the underlying merits of this case, but really that is not even before this court. The plaintiff filed a motion to reconsider more than 10 days after judgment was entered in this case, and that is the denial of that motion to reconsider is the issue before this court. The district court did not abuse its discretion in denying that motion to reconsider for three reasons. First of all, the plaintiff never gave the district court a reason to grant him relief under Rule 60. And since he had filed his motion to reconsider more than 10 days after judgment was entered, he was required to do so. Secondly, the district court did not abuse its discretion because, contrary to plaintiff's argument that mistakes of law made by district courts are reasons for relief under Rule 60, they are not in this circuit. And third, the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion to reconsider because the amended complaint that the plaintiff proposed to file at that time did not cure the defects of the original complaint. And I'll start there because you had some questions about the complaint and what it really did state. The motion to reconsider is at tab 5, and the proposed amended complaint is attached to that. There was only one real change made from the original complaint to the proposed amended complaint, and that is that they removed the sixth paragraph, which was the paragraph that explicitly cited to the Rehabilitation Act. But the proposed amended complaint still had in it what Your Honor referred to, the reference to the contractual and legal obligation that the college had to provide interpreter services, and it also still attached the portion of the college's catalog that Your Honor referenced. And the only portion of that catalog that could all be relevant to this case is the part that talks about services for student disabilities. And what that says, and the only relevant part of that, is it says the college complies with the Rehabilitation Act. So any contractual obligation here is created by the Rehabilitation Act, and the district court properly found that that cause of action was time barred. So the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the plaintiff's request to file this amended complaint. Going back to my other two points, first, the plaintiff has never stated a reason that is valid under Rule 60 that he's entitled to relief from the judgment. He's argued that he only filed his motion to reconsider a few days late, and he should not be disadvantaged for having only filed a few days late. But in U.S. v. Deutsch, this court held that there is a bright that 10-day timeline is a bright line rule. Motions to reconsider filed within that 10 days are considered under Rule 59, but after Rule 60. So that is a hard and fast deadline that the plaintiff missed. And last, plaintiff argues in his reply brief for the first time that the mistake of law by the district court was a proper reason to that he was entitled to relief from the judgment. But this circuit has rejected that argument in Cash v. Illinois Division of Mental Health and also Russell v. Delco Remy Division of General Motors. So just in conclusion, if there was an error made in this case, it was not by the district court for denying the motion to reconsider. It was by the plaintiff when they first filed an untimely complaint, then filed an untimely motion to reconsider, and last filed this appeal untimely as to the underlying judgment. So we ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Well, your time had run out, but I'll give you another minute if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. Opposing counsel raises a number of issues, and I don't believe these issues merit a very lengthy response. No matter what the procedural wrangling or arguments appellee sets forth, it's all irrelevant if the district court lacked subject matter jurisdiction. And I submit to you that there was never jurisdiction in this case, nor could there ever be subject matter jurisdiction in this case in federal court. And the claims lacked all of the requirements of a Rehabilitation Act claim. It could not have been a valid claim in a federal court. Therefore, we would ask that this court remand the case to the district court with special instructions to remand the case back to the 19th Judicial Circuit. Unless you have any further questions, I have nothing further to say.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case will be taken under advisement.